Those of you who have been around here for a while know that I like to introduce the readings, and it gives us an opportunity. We're early in the Gospel of Mark, and I want to introduce some themes that occur in our Gospel that you will hear again and again throughout the book of Mark. Now, at the time of Jesus, you can sit for a little bit. At the time of Jesus, Judaism was a diverse group. There were the chief priests, for example. They were the heredity kind of office officials. They supervised the temple in Jerusalem. Scribes were the theologians and the lawyers of the time. They were expert at the interpreting the law. The elders were men of wealth, leaders of the aristocratic families. They were the kind of status quo people. You know, they got along pretty well with Romans, and they had it pretty well. The Sanhedrin, remember last week, Nicodemus was a part of the Sanhedrin. They pretty much functioned as the domestic government. And then there were the Pharisees that we'll hear again today. And they were kind of a self-appointed group. And they were the progressives, trying to make the law valid to the regular folks, which were mostly peasants, right? And then we hear about the Herodians today, and that's historically the most difficult to figure out who they were. But the name kind of gives it away. They were in cahoots, you know, with Herod and the Romans. And so the Pharisees and the Herodians were just opposed to each other. Unless they could maybe find a common enemy, as you'll hear shortly. The second thing about Mark, the plot of Mark is conflict. Our reading today is the second chapter of Mark, or in the first few verses of chapter 3, and already five conflicts. Today's are number 4 and 5. And we have to remember that we know who Jesus is. I mean, Mark tells us right away at the baptism, right? And there's this voice, you know, this is my beloved son. These people were not there. And they, from their perspective, they were the ones to guard, appointed by God to, you know, guard the faith and the traditions. And so to oppose them, see, was to oppose God. To stray from their way, their interpretations, was to stray from the way of God. So, ooh, conflict. And the third thing, it's the Sabbath. And, of course, you can't work on the Sabbath, you know, but couldn't do any work. And, you know, it's a little ambiguous because you could do good on the Sabbath, but the guy has a withered hand, right? And, I mean, probably didn't get that way yesterday, you know, so they could argue, you know, I mean, let it go, you know, until tomorrow, right? So Jesus, and this is another theme that you'll see, he's very clever. He does not say heal, doesn't touch the man. All he does is say, stretch your hand. Can't get him for that, huh? So let's stand for the reading from Mark 2 and 3. One Sabbath, Jesus was going through the grain fields, and as they made their way, his disciples began to pluck heads of grain. And the Pharisees said to him, look, why are they doing what is not lawful on the Sabbath? And Jesus said to them, have you never read what David did when he and his companions were hungry and in need of food? He entered the house of God when Abiathar was high priest and ate the bread of the presence, which is not lawful for any but the priests to eat, and he gave some to his companions. And then he said to them, The Sabbath was made for humankind, and not humankind for the Sabbath. So the Son of Man, this is also kind of a subtle term. What does that mean, right? But the Son of Man is Lord, even of the Sabbath. That's not going to go over well. Again, he entered the synagogue, and a man was there who had a withered hand. They watched him to see whether he would cure him on the Sabbath, so that they might accuse him. And he said to the man who had the withered hand, "Come forward." And then he said to them, "Is it lawful to do good or to do harm on the Sabbath, to save life or to kill?" But they were silent. He looked around at them with anger. See, this conflict is getting even more intense. Jesus is angry today. He was grieved at their hardness of heart and said to the man, "Stretch out your hand." He stretched it out, and the hand was restored. And the Pharisees went out and immediately conspired with the Herodians against him, how to destroy him. The Gospel of the Lord.
Praise to you, O Christ.
God's beloved people, some of you are old enough to remember that in Monty Python's satire movie on the life of Jesus called The Life of Brian, there's this wonderful scene that's kind of a great Sermon on the Mount scene, right? And after Brian says, "Blessed are the peacemakers," there's a little old man way in the back, kind of on the fringes, can't hear very well, and he says, "What?"
Did he say, "Blessed are the cheesemakers"?
Yeah. What did he say? And they said, "That's right.
Blessed are the cheesemakers."
It's just a wonderful, if ridiculous, example of how we can just twist things around so badly that their meaning gets completely lost, and even our priorities get changed as well. When I was in high school, sometimes after a Friday night basketball game, what am I saying? It's not basketball. This was Duluth, Minnesota, after a Friday night hockey game. A bunch of us would gather at somebody's house to celebrate another victory. After all, my senior year, we did win the state high school hockey championship. And inevitably, we would order a pizza. You know, pepperoni, sausage, meat lovers. Except, of course, our Catholic friends. They had to settle and be content with cheese. Because, you know, in those days, Catholics couldn't eat meat on Friday, remember? So that was true until 1201, when inevitably one of them had hidden a pepperoni under the couch and would bring it out to their friend's surprise and delight. So, no meat on Friday was an identity thing. I mean, that's how I knew which of my friends were Catholic. It was an identity thing. Well, how much more was the Sabbath the heart and center of Jewish identity at the time of Jesus? It was a badge of Jerusalem for people who had been persecuted simply for being Jewish. It was a national flag that spoke of freedom to come, of hope for the great day of rest when God would finally liberate Israel from pagan oppression. It looked back on the creation of the world when on the seventh day God Sabbath God sabbaticaled or rested. It remembered the exodus from Egypt when God had loved Israel enough to bring the people into freedom. And it marked those who kept it as God's special people, God's faithful people, God's hoping people. It wasn't an odd moral commandment which people did to earn favor with God. It was a sign that they belonged to the true God, creator of the world, who rested on the seventh day. But let's remember that story. Blessed are the cheesemakers. The Pharisees probably do not disagree with Jesus on the proper protocol of the Sabbath. They know full well that saving life and doing good are lawful on the Sabbath. It's just that Jesus' opponents are not in worship that day to fulfill God's will or serve God's priorities. They are there to twist things around, to gather evidence. And as often happens, one gets from worship just what one seeks. The Pharisees waltz out of the synagogue and into the arms of the Herodians with just enough distorted evidence and alternative facts to plot Jesus' death. Jesus wasn't killed for his views of the Sabbath or the synagogue. And it wasn't because he stirred up political revolution. He was killed because he did God's will. God's priorities were Jesus' priorities. And that can get you into trouble. Thomas Long, who's a great American preacher and a professor of preaching, I wonder, he might have been a presenter at that preaching conference that Beth and Eric went to last week in D.C. I mean, he's that good. And he tells this little story, commenting on this gospel reading in the Christian century. On an episode of This American Life, a young father tells about taking his preschool daughter to lunch on Martin Luther King holiday. On their table was the art section of the local newspaper with a drawing of Martin Luther King. His daughter asked who that was, and the father told her, adding, "He's why you're not in school today." And he went on to tell her that King was a preacher and that his message was that we should treat everyone equally, no matter who they are. And the little daughter thought about it and said, "Well, that's what Jesus said." And then he goes on. And I said, "Yeah, I guess it is. You know, I never thought of it quite that way, but yeah. It's like, do unto others as you would have them do unto you." And the little girl thought for a minute and then looked up at her dad and asked, "Did they kill him too?" Blessed are the cheesemakers. Mark describes a two-part confrontation between Jesus and the Pharisees. In part one, Jesus and his disciples are walking through a grain field on the Sabbath, and when they get hungry, the disciples, you know, pluck a few heads of grain to munch on. And Jesus doesn't stop them, and the Pharisees pounce, asking Jesus why he's allowing his followers to break the Sabbath. Jesus answers, "The Sabbath was made for humankind and not humankind for the Sabbath. So the Son of Man is Lord even of the Sabbath." And then in part two, Jesus enters the synagogue and meets a man with a withered hand. Knowing he's watched, Jesus asks the Pharisees whether it's lawful to do good or harm on the Sabbath, to save life or to kill. But the Pharisees refused to answer. And angered and grieved by their hardness of heart, Jesus cleverly heals the man with a withered hand. And the story ends predictably with the Pharisees leaving the synagogue to plot against Jesus' life. Now, it's really important to note that the Pharisees in this story are not a stand-in for Judaism. They are a stand-in for all convictions, values, traditions, commitments, doctrines, absolutes, proclivities, preferences, and essentialisms, no matter how cherished, noble, or well-intentioned, that stand between us and compassion. In other words, the question the story asks is not what was wrong with first century Judaism, but rather, what have we here and now ossified at our peril? What mortal broken thing have we deified instead of love? Who or what have we stopped seeing because our eyes have been blinded by our own best intentions? What are we clinging to that is not God? We do an injustice to the Pharisees if we write them off as bad people. They were good people. Good people trying to preserve and protect those things, all those laws, rituals, traditions, habits that mediated faith for them. Don't we do exactly the same thing when we hold fast to our favorite worship practices and cherished spiritual habits and beloved rituals? The Pharisees were not wrong to uphold the Sabbath. They were absolutely right. But remember, blessed are the cheesemakers. Rightness is not love. Rightness is not compassion. Rightness will never get us to Jesus, the Lord of the Sabbath. Only compassion will do that. This is an unnerving story. It's a story about Jesus walking through the sacred fields of our lives and plucking away what we hold dear. It's a story about Jesus seeing people we are too holy to notice, in healing people we'd just as well leave sick. It's a story about a God who will not allow us to cling to anything less bold, daring, exhilarating, and world-altering than love. Why would anyone bring the business of a synagogue to a grinding halt on a Sabbath morning? Why would someone, like Jesus, for example, risk his own life to heal a stranger's withered hand? Apparently, nothing is more sacred than compassion. The spirit of the Sabbath, the spirit of God is love. Love that heals the sick, that feeds the hungry, that sees and attends to the invisible. Apparently, there is only one absolute, and it's love, compassion, grace, and cheese, and peace, and all that good stuff. Amen.